calls of the trainers as they carried out the taskmaster's overseeing will, honing the warriors to the best of their ability. But it wasn't enough, Grisholt's mind whispered. That made him pop the cork on the bottle and drain a third of it. He thought back to his exchange with the Jiberian. That one had balls, to be sure. It was unfortunate that he was a free-trained bastard, and also unfortunate he'd gotten on Grisholt's bad side, adding further poison to a venomous day. He'd gone to petition the chamber for funds, willing to agree to any interest, just to keep his stable going until he could get a few victories this season. That they refused him was really no surprise. The chamber was as reputable and sly as bankers, but only for awarding and collecting, not loaning. And Grisholt was at the end of his credit. Harm was only a fart in a summer storm, yet he drifted across Grisholt's nose at the very worst time. Jiberian shite! And to actually insult him in front of his men. The memory of the exchange cut him freshly again. That was something he couldn't allow. His conscience would not permit the slight to go unanswered. Grisholt's very name depended on him doing something to the Jiberian. The question was, what? There, in the receding light, Grisholt sat and simmered and drank. Marok brought him his supper, and the servant gave him a hard eye for taking all of the ale. Grisholt ate the stew, which seemed mostly juice and gristle, with a few chopped vegetables tossed in. He left the empty bowl on the desk, pushed aside as though a dog had slopped it up. Back in his father's day, women flaunting exquisite figures would have been serving him. Not now. Grisholt sighed. Now he had shite, and he was on the verge of losing even that. He became aware of how much time had passed, when he heard the shades come through the door, one carrying a torch. Their entry alerted him that it was night, and he'd been mulling in the growing dark. Grisholt didn't even have the coin to buy oil for the lamps anymore. Yes. He despised the drunken slur in his own voice.
Caro is here,
Brakkus announced, his face orange from the flame. Caro edged past the bigger man and slipped into sight. He'd been a fighter himself at one time, but unlike Brakkus, age had slowed him. His skills were still there, but against a younger opponent he'd be sliced up the middle and garnished with his own guts.
Master Grisholt, Caro greeted.
Grisholt reached for a bottle of ale but knocked it over. It clattered on his desk, but nothing came out. Grisholt frowned. He'd forgotten he drank it all a moment ago, but at least he didn't lose any.
What did you find out? He croaked. Their names are Harm of Jiberia and Goal of Cree. The Cree was the same one who killed the butcher of Balgathar. The pair is looking to establish their own house. It seems the chamber asked for 1,000 gold pieces as a fee to do so, and if they pay it, they can introduce whoever they have with them as belonging to their house. This I learned from one of the attendants who was there, listening in on it all.
Grisholt winced. How much did that cost?
Nothing, Caro said with a stony air. It saved him from having both his arms broken.
Excellent. You certainly have a style about you. Doesn't he, Brakkus?
He does,
the once gladiator said. Go on. Grisholt tugged on his beard.
They went into the city afterwards and stopped at an alehouse. The cripple did most of the talking, it seemed. The fat man did little except stand there and scowl.
The Jiberian. Caro nodded.
I followed and eventually got close enough to hear they'll be looking for a taskmaster and trainers, and a place to work from. Seems they want to get out of general quarters.
Don't blame them for that, Brakkus muttered, and heard a hard, silencing look from Grisholt.
The one named Gol already knows of two names, Caro continued, Thymondus and Clavellus.
Thymondus and Clavellus, Grisholt repeated. Thymondus won't be bothered with them. They're beneath him, and he's retired. Clavellus is also retired. That one had a falling out with Kurge, of all people. was practically run out of the city for crossing him. He won't go back for fear of that bastard's wrath. Grisholt leaned back in his chair. Fine wonders. He might be bought, though, for the right price, if this pair can afford to establish a house. That notion made him sit up. How can they afford 1,000 gold? Where are they getting it? Or better yet, where are they keeping it? The pair of men before him had no answers. What else did you learn? Grisholt asked anxiously, tugging firmly on his whiskers. That was all. I had to go back to question the attendant before he left for home. Then I rode here, practically killed my horse. Good man, good man. Grisholt sat and mulled, trying to fight off the ale, numbing his brain. 1,000 gold. They wouldn't be asking for taskmasters if they couldn't afford one. That means they have something somewhere. They have coin, coin lads, those free, trained bloods of bitches have coin hidden somewhere. Not a bank. Too cumbersome to leave it in a bank, especially if they're wagering. So the question is... Kero looked at Brackers. Well, could they be hoarding it, I wonder? Grisholt gazed at the painting draped in shadows. Where could they? They're probably confined to general quarters, and I can't see a pot like that being kept secret amongst those dogs for long. So where is it? Neither Kero nor Brackus answered. Taking a deep breath, Grisholt pointed at Kero. In the morning, I want you to find exactly where these toppers are and follow them. If they stop at a shite trough, I want you to hand them the scrub brush for their cracks. Understood? Kero nodded. Find out where they go and where they are staying, if they aren't in the bowels of the pit, and keep me informed of the situation, especially if they go to either Clavellus or Thymondas. Use any other contacts or scum if you have to. 1,000 gold would make a very large difference in the existence of our stable. If you find anything and need extra arms, let Brackus know. He'll take a few of the lads out to deal with any situation. Stay away from the scars. And... Grisholt paused, releasing his beard. We might be able to profit from this information. Just might. Seddon's black hanging fruit. This is excellent news. Well done, Kero. Very well done. Keep at them. Sniff them out and stay in the shadows. Don't move on anything unless I say... I understand. Brackers, do we have any lads who might be up for a little blood work if needed? And it probably will be needed. Those dogs won't let any funds go for nothing. They'll fight. Pick 6 or 7 who aren't concerned with spilling blood outside of the pit and keep them close. Brackers nodded. Wonderful news, boys, wonderful news. Grisholt beamed. I can almost feel the tides of fortune swinging in our favour. There isn't anything quite like pounding a pair of dog blossoms into the dirt and taking what's theirs. 1,000 gold pieces. In the torchlight, Grisholt's wet smile glittered. Chapter 11. In the alehouse alcove that had become their meeting place and den, Harm, Gaul and Mullock, only now recovering from the night before, sat and talked. The night deepened outside, and the air within the building warmed up as farmers, merchants, drinkers, and even a few warrior types filled up the space and tables. Laughter, shrill and low, pierced the low din of conversation, but the three men sitting around the table barely heard it.
"You're both insane,"
Mullock shook his head. The thickening stubble about his chin only made him appear meaner, darker.
That's 1,000 gold you're talking about. 1,000? You can't just yank that out of your ass.
Maybe his ass,
Harm indicated Gaul. He seems to think it isn't much at all.
I understand it's a lot of coin, Gaul's voice grated, and I didn't say I'd get it tomorrow. But if we gather what we have, I'll start wagering it.
That's the fishhook I was waiting for,
Mullock interrupted his countryman. You want me to put into this? Gaul regarded him, visibly checking his growing annoyance. You were quick to throw in with us a moment ago. Any venture is a gamble. This one is no less. Don't worry about your money. Just give me what you can afford, even if it's just a piece, and I'll make it work. I know how to gauge fighters. Mullock winced. This puts me out. I'm not even in the regular tournament now. Been put out by this one here? He chopped the hand at Harm. Best I find something else. Didn't you once say you could hammer out armor? Goal asked. Mullock blinked at him. Aye, but what? Can you repair armor? Mullock shrugged. I can, but, and you certainly can put an edge to a blade. Yes, but what? But if you'll let me get the words out, you cut-up he-bitch, I'll answer you. Mullock snapped, glowered, and shook his head in exasperation at Harm. The Cree took a moment to compose himself. I grew up around an armourer, yes, but that was a long time ago, and I've only done the easy work. Nothing like actually fashioning a chainmail shirt, which is damned boring, I'll have you know, or fitting a man for armour, and it all takes time. I'd need a smithy and then a person or two to help. You'll have them. What? Even Harm blinked at Goal. You will have them. Once I've set the house up, we'd need to have a proper weaponsmith and armourer. Can't use the weapons of the pit after that. Most only take them from the armoury because they don't have their own. We can use them in the meantime, until we can afford our own. But not for long. All other house fighters have their own weapons, and so shall we. We won't be any different. I can't make weapons. You can still put an edge to a sword. Mullock closed his eyes in resignation and gave the barest of nods. Then you have a place amongst us. Until we can find someone better. You can even fight in the matches that aren't in the tournament if you like. Not something I'd want you to do. You'd be as useless as a rock to us if you lost a limb or were killed outright. You're more valuable now, unhurt. So are you with us? Appearing as if in agony, Mullock rubbed the side of his face and nodded. You give your word, Goal persisted. I don't want to give you my word. I'd feel better if you did. I'm not giving my word. I want to be able to leave if I have to. That didn't impress Goal. Are you sure you're from Cree? I'm starting to have suspicions. As am I. Look, Harm broke in, this is all well and fine, but we do have one problem. We still don't have a place to do all this. We can't use general quarters. We'll be laughed out of the pit. I have a few ideas on that, Goal said. We'll take the trip to this Clavella's tomorrow. I've been told he's the closest. His land is east of here, within a day, and I have directions to get there. If he'll be our taskmaster, we'll take him. If not, we'll go southwest the next day and visit Thymondas. Either one of them may have an idea of where we might set up the training area, if not on his property itself. And if they both turn you down? Mullock asked skeptically. I'm not so sure about a couple of names thrown at you for a coin by some half-drunk bastard in a tavern. I don't like this damn attitude of yours, Goal informed him. Well, let me have a little more Sunjin gold and see me later. Goal ignored that. My information is correct. Harm was there when I double-checked it with other patrons, and if the taskmasters both turn us down, then we'll have to find property for ourselves. That's when it'll get difficult, as it'll probably be outside the city and beyond the bluff. We'll have to stake it or buy it, which doesn't please me either way, as it'll take away time we could be using for other things, like training and wagering on fights. If we're truly unlucky, we'll have to build it from the bottom up, but we'll have to be prepared to do so, even if it means not competing in the games any further. That's more sensible, Harm stated. Next year might be the right idea. I think there's just too much to be done in such a short time. The season's only about 60 days, you know. Next year, Mullock repeated. You've never held a hammer before, have you? If we have to build it, it'll take longer than a year. It's no house we're talking about. And what about the others? Who? Goal asked back. The others. Right now it's only you, me and him. And Pignot, Harm added. Did you ask him about this? Not yet. Waiting to see where he is. Well, he won his fight this day. Gol reported pensively.
He could be anywhere then, probably drunk, and with a woman in each arm as well.
Harm smiled.
Pignot knows how to celebrate.
I'm not so certain I want him with us on this.
Gol eyed Harm frankly.
What? Why?
I saw his fight. Granted he won, but it wasn't anything to be proud of. Both fighters looked to be drunk at the time. It was, in fact, the worst fight I've ever witnessed. It was that bad. He didn't impress me in the least.
He was probably hungover.
Harm's smile withered when he saw the seriousness on Gol's features.
Hungover.
That proves my suspicion right there. He was drinking the night before his match. What kind of man does that?
I do,
Harm answered.
I do too, said Mullock. Or dead.
Gol was momentarily speechless.
Well, no longer. You won't see any of the house fighters doing such a thing because the taskmaster and trainers would kill them for it. That's one part of your lives you'll both have to give up. Not you, Mullock. So you can shut your hole now, unless you do happen to try for one of the non-tournament fights. But you, Harm, you're still in the tournament. No more drinking the week of your fight.
Sometimes we don't know if we're to fight from day to day.
Rarely happens, I expect, and even then it's probably because someone else can't fight. The media, if he's professional, is supposed to check his matches the day before, but he should be planning fights a week in advance. We'll check with him and the schedule every morning. I'm certain the other houses do it, and so will we.
They get advance warning, Mullock said.
And why is that?
Mullock paused for a moment, thinking.
Because they're houses?
Gol nodded in satisfaction.
Good. Nice to see you can think.
That made the other Cree scowl.
Pignot'll want to be with us,
Harm said.
Oh, now he will.
I'm not so sure.
He will. Guaranteed.
Gol didn't answer right away.
I'll think about it, but I don't care for the idea.
That man's reckless, sloppy. Unless he can offer something off the sands, perhaps.
I'll talk to him.
Harm scratched his bare belly.
Perhaps it's best you do.
Gol trailed off. In another part of the city, Pignot staggered along back alleyways, kept upright only by the wall pressing against his right shoulder. His reality swam and lurched up and down and side to side. The quarried flat stones seemed to warp and ripple like the waters of an open bay on a moon-bright night. Voices swirled about him, sounding like gibberish, and for a moment he placed his cheek against the surface of the wall and just breathed in the sour air of the city.
Drank too much. Much too much.
He should be dead. Wished for death. Or at least a place to piss. He remembered the men in the pool. They'd left him alone for the rest of his time there, but he was certain they were keeping an eye on him, lurking in the dark. Even when he got up to leave, they talked to him, watched him, which bothered him more than he cared to admit, even with the spirits stealing him. He had gold left on him, but not as much as when he started. 2 gold coins were in the right pocket on his trousers and 1 in his left. The trousers felt damp, for a bathhouse attendant had cleaned and hung them out to partially dry while Pignot became progressively drunker. His white shirt had been washed and cleaned as well, but that would probably change sooner or later this night. Pignot planned on throwing up at least 2x more before the dawn, and in his experience, when it happened, wherever it happened, a few drops were bound to splash him somewhere. He stood there, cheek seemingly fastened to the brick, gasping like a fish and enjoying the coolness of the wall. It grounded him, and he became aware of people going by, shadows in a shadowy place, and laughter echoing and sounding as if he were several feet underwater.
Dying sudden.
He drank far too much this night, but he had 2 coins in his pocket to buy more. The left coin, when he was ready, would afford him a room for the night somewhere. He liked to save a little just for that exact thing.
Can't stay here,
Pignot mumbled to himself, gasped for air, and pushed away from the wall. He felt as if he was falling for a moment, and his hand flashed out to catch something. Missed. He hit the road with a bone-jarring thud, his jaw snapping and biting his own tongue hard enough to draw blood. He got his arms out in time so he didn't break his face, which would only have added more insult to injury. Pignot grunted and just lay there, thinking himself unhurt but drunk enough to lie in the alley and feel the pulse of the flat stones covering the road. Someone kicked his shin.
"Move on," Pignot slurred, warning his attacker.
More laughter, more voices, but he ignored them and tasted grit and blood. He spat and breathed in, feeling more dust go up his nose.
"Ah!"
Pignot twisted his face up and rolled onto his back. He sat up slowly, baring his teeth at the end, and sat in the street for another moment. The grit and dust in his mouth made him spit and wipe his face, and he grimaced when he saw his palm was darker than usual. It took him a moment to realize he'd bitten his tongue, but at least he didn't piss himself. That was all he needed, the final touch and insult. Someone nudged his shoulder with a knee and got a grumble from him. That contact got him moving. He stood unsteadily and took in a deep lungful of air. That helped him a bit, and he stepped forward, seeking more drink. He didn't stagger far. Lanterns lit the entryway to an alehouse, and the sounds of laughter and conversation pulled Pignot in. The building seemed to have only two levels, and garish green and orange banners hung from the eaves overhead. He walked up a short series of steps to a worn landing and stopped on the threshold, placing his shoulder against the frame and peering inside. Men and women stood and sat, mingled and drank. Smells of fresh breads and meat caught his attention, as did several people drinking at what looked to be a very long bar. Women tossed their heads back and flaunted striking figures, while the men crowded them with lecherous smiles and conversations. People drank deeply of flagons and bottles, while more such containers jigged behind a fence of heads and shoulders, being carried off somewhere. A platter of roasted pork steamed by, and Pignot felt his stomach come to attention. The room sucked him onto the main floor. Good times were being had here, and he was all for having good times. Some of the people parted for him, and he smiled back with a drunkard's politeness, not recognizing the puzzlement on their faces. In Pignot's wine-soaked mind, they were in awe of him, as they should be. He could be damned handsome when he had clothes on. The mass of people continued to get out of his way, until the bar revealed itself to him. He reached it like a swimmer who'd gone a very, very long distance. He placed his elbows on the dark wooden surface, swung his head about, and rapped knuckles to get the barkeep's attention. All three of them seemed to notice him, as did some of the patrons standing around. Pignot forced his best smile at them all to ease their minds, aimed the same smile at a few lovely women nearby, and even winked at a comely one with dark hair. She frowned and whispered in another woman's ear. Unfazed, Pignot thought to greet his neighbors.
"Fine night,"
he slurred to a man nearby, who shook his head and showed his back.
"Fine, then,"
Pignot said simply. He had better things to do as well, but he wasn't about to do them if he couldn't catch the attention of the barkeeps. Across the way, brass flagons and pitchers, filled with goodness only Seddon knew about, gleamed and teased and were handed to others. Just watching the exchanges made him all the more thirsty.
"You there," Pignot called out to the nearest barkeep. "I've got a coin here. Help me spend it, would you?"
The barkeep, a young man with a gap in his front teeth and a long face, glanced to and away from the sunjun. He didn't appear to be the happiest, not in Pignot's mind.
"Lad's deaf,"
he slurred to another man nearby, who moved a bit away from him. Pignot shrugged and looked around. Two more women caught his attention, attractive and wearing tight dark dresses that lifted their white breasts. It was like an overripe orchard around here, he mulled.
"Ladies?"
Pignot greeted them. The women's once pleasant expressions soured, and they huddled closer together before moving away.
"Tarts,"
Pignot declared. The lot of them appeared to be right unfriendly, and the barkeeps were slower than frozen cow kisses sliding uphill. He dug into his trouser pocket and dug out the two coins. He rubbed them together, making that metallic grinding that he and Halm often joked would hook the attention of a barkeep the next country over. Here, it drew only annoyed faces.
This is unfit.
Pignot grunted and wrapped the coins off the countertop. Hard. They noticed him now. In fact, several around him noticed the burly man. Pignot didn't care. He wanted a drink. He wanted one now. He wrapped the coins on the surface again.
Come on, you see me here. What damn goody is this about? Look!
He held up his gold and rubbed them together once more, for perhaps a longer period than he intended. But he didn't care. The wine and beer he'd consumed earlier armored him.
You hear that? Listen.
He scrubbed the coins together, clenching his teeth as he did so.
First alehouse I've been in where the keepers stay away from that sound. How does one get a pitcher around here? Should have dropped my trousers.
He guffawed in inebriated jest, glancing around and finding only the backs of heads.
You there!
He poked the nearest man in the spine. The fellow only half turned, enough to reveal a none too happy profile. But Pignot was drunk.
How does one go about get... getting a drink in this place? Pardon me, my lady.
He directed at the disgusted face of an otherwise pretty blonde woman standing in front of the man he was talking to, or talking at. They both moved away, leaving Pignot puzzled.
Right, unfriendly bunch,
he muttered, and clashed the coins off the bar once more.
Wake up there,
yeah, ponces,
he was about to say, but a part of him stopped those last words. Drunk and brazen though he'd become, he was still conscious of causing an uproar. No wench would have him if that happened.
This fellow wants a drink here.
A man stepped in beside him, smiling at Pignot, and put his elbow on the counter, facing him and properly studying him. Pignot sized him up back, swaying as he did despite being anchored by the bar. The stranger was a few fingers shorter than Pignot, with white hair, of all things, and a youthful face. His blue eyes were dull yet filled with amusement. The man wore a sleeveless shirt as well, showing off meaty arms.
Thank you,
Pignot said to him. The stranger nodded it was quite all right. A barkeep approached and snatched the coin with a dark frown. Pignot scowled back.
No need for that. A pitcher of wine is all I want, please.
The barkeep turned away almost immediately.
Unfit, Pignot said. Did you see that? Right, unfit.
I saw, agreed the smiling man.
They like this with everyone.
Only you, I think.
Why is that?
The man's smile widened. You don't belong here. Obviously don't belong. Pignot grinned back.
I don't belong in a lot of places. Heard that all my life, it seems. Well, I like this place. Could be a bit more friendly, is all.
He directed the word at the returning barkeep, who set a brass pitcher down in front of him hard enough to make the contents jump.
Ah!
Pignot let out, and got to sucking up the drops spilled over the curves of the pitcher.
Too good to waste,
he remarked, between noisy slurps.
It is that,
the stranger agreed. What's your name? Pignot straightened up, glad to have finally met a decent fellow to share a conversation. He held out his fist to tap.
Pignot. Yours?
Prages. He ignored the offered fist and pursed his lips. Your Sunjin?
Aye, that.
Prages smiled at something over Pignot's shoulder. What is it you do, Pignot? Interesting name, then.
It is. It is. Presently I fight in the games.
Pignot realized his fist wasn't about to be tapped and so let it drop. He took a long pull at the wine. It was sweet and strong and to his liking.
Oh, you fight in the games,
Prages repeated with mild fascination.
I see. I see. Have you fought yet?
I have.
You?
Have you won any? Prages asked, ignoring the question put to him. and Pignot was drunk enough to let it go.
I have,
he replied, but when Prager smiled at something over his shoulder again, Pignot turned. There stood three hard-looking men shadowing him, the biggest being able to glare directly into Pignot's eyes. None of them appeared too pleased with him, for whatever reason. Don't mind them. Prages pulled Pignot's attention back. So, Prages's brow crunched in thought. Did you happen to fight this day?
I did. Won it as well.
Oh, you won it. Prages's expression lit up with interest. Your stable master must have been happy about that. Pignot shrugged.
Don't have one.
Why is that? Prages asked amicably.
Just in the games by myself.
Free-trained.
Aye, that.
He's free-trained. Said and above. Prager seemed genuinely amused and looked at the counter.
You hear that, lads?
He asked the other three men.
Enough of this gurry,
someone said behind Pignot, as he took another swallow of wine. But Prager shook his head.
I'm a gladiator myself.
You are?
Pignot brightened.
I am. House of Gastello.
House of Gastello? Heard of him?
Oh, you have.
Aye, that. Isn't he the one with the gold mask?
He is, he is. I see you know something of the houses. The ones that matter, that is. Pignot noticed that Plagius's smile hardened, his eyes narrowed, as if a great joke was about to be revealed.
I know a bit. He's quite nice to let you out for a drink.
Ah, lords,
I know,
Prages agreed again. But then I don't have to fight tomorrow. Or for the next few days, for that matter. None of us do. Not yet. Unlike you free-trained shite. You can just about drink whenever you like. Isn't that right?
Something like that.
Pignot nodded guardedly, wondering if he'd just properly heard himself being called shite. Fought in the games before.
And this now, Prages,
someone said behind Pignot, and that caused warning tingles to course up the back of his neck. He turned about and placed his back against the bar, noting the men behind now surrounded him.
I have.
How many seasons? Prages held up a hand to the other three men.
So remember?
You don't remember? Prages chuckled.
Aye, that. And you're a Sanjan.
I am.
The smile drained from Prages's face.
You must truly have a head full of shite, then, to come in here and drink with us.
Or you're looking for another fight. Pignot blinked.
Let me make this clear.
Prages's face became exceedingly understanding as he took away the pitcher of wine. Pignot made to protest, but Prager shook his head as though admonishing a child. When he had it in his hand, he made to drink it, then stopped.
Sudden above. I forgot this dog Blossom was drinking from this.
He smiled quite cruelly. Prager splashed the wine into Pignot's face, sending him into sputters. So much for his shirt. The House of Gastillo warrior brightly smirked as Pignot cleared his eyes and face.
You free-trained ass-packers don't have enough brains to rub together, let alone two same-undamned coins. You even know where you are, maggot shite, huh?
This part of the city is far underway from the green shite troughs you sleep in, and with good reason. You lot are an embarrassment to the profession, our profession. Galls me black to even see you in the same city, so you'll understand if we toss you out.
Lads,
arms looped over Pignot's, while one powerful limb lashed around his throat, choking the life from him.
Take this ass-licker outside.
They manhandled him towards the door, and Pignot could not resist. Prages followed them, grinning at other patrons as if to say,
Did you hear that?
The crowd erupted into cheers, loud whoops and whistles, startling Pignot as the darkness of the open doorway loomed ahead. Curses rained down, scalding his drunken senses. All he'd wanted was a damn drink, perhaps something to eat, and most definitely a woman. Was that too much to ask? They hauled him out into the streets, where they twisted him towards an alleyway.
Over here.
The one holding his neck grunted the words into Pignot's ear. The darkness of that alley set off an alarm in Pignot's drunken head, and he struggled with growing ferocity. He didn't want to be taken into the shadows. Memories of stories of free, trained warriors being found dead or savagely brutalized in the dawn's heat filled his mind and added even more strength to his struggles. He dug his boots in but felt them slide over the smooth stones paving the road. The alley drew closer until his legs disappeared into the blackness.
"Easy, you tit,"
one said from the side.
"He's like an eel,"
said another.
"Get his legs there."
Then Prageous's voice, sounding as if he had another smile on his face. "Grab him by the cog and bells. That'll take the fight out of him." No sooner was it said than Pignot felt a hand enter between his legs from behind, brushing against his inner thighs, and he knew very well that if he didn't do something right then, that he'd be another alehouse story of horror, another tale of how a free, trained man, drunk out of his skull, wandered into a nest of house gladiators, angry house gladiators, who proceeded to remove him from the premises and drag him, kicking, into the night, where they did unspeakable things. Pignot felt the hand rise further, twisting, searching, about to grab his plums. He went crazy. He snapped his head back while kicking upwards, evading the hand between his thighs and surprising them all. They shoved him towards a wall. Pignot slammed his feet against the surface and walked briskly up the side, twisting his limbs in his captor's grasps. He pushed off, breaking the grip about his neck amid straining grunts. Pignot landed, set his feet, and rammed a shoulder into the brute holding his right arm, slamming him into the wall. He stomped on another's foot and got one arm loose, smashing a fist into the throat of the lout holding his other arm. Suddenly, Pignot was free. He spun around in time to have a fist crack across his cheek, whipping his face to the side. Another punched him in the gut, making Pignot wheeze in pain. He dropped to a knee. Something crashed down on his back while a fist smashed into the side of his head with teeth-rattling force. Whispers laced the shadows, threatening as the hiss of snakes. A knee smacked into his forehead, spinning his senses.
"Hold him!"
someone insisted, and hands grabbed his shoulders. Pignot reached up and grabbed two different sets of cogs and bells. He clenched the genitals as if they were bad grapes, and two voices became shocked squeaks. The hands on him fell away, and two figures crumpled to the road.
"You brazen topper!"
Prageous. Pignot surged upwards and tackled the shape, driving Prageous against the opposite alley wall. He hit hard. Fingers covered Pignot's face, feeling for eyes. Pignot lifted the man off his feet and hurled him to the road. Prageous crashed with an angry gasp and scrambled halfway to his feet before Pignot kicked him squarely in the face, snapping his head back and dropping him again. The free, trained, twisted to one side then, barely evading the knife, slicing the space he once occupied. He punched the knife man twice, solid blows to the face and gut, backing the attacker up on his heels, but he recovered quickly. The steel flashed in the night, and Pignot blocked it with his forearm. He cracked the knife man a third time across the jaw, twisting him against the wall.
"Knives," Pignot hissed. "Four on one, and still."
The knife man sprang off the bricks. His blade lashed out and licked the sunburn across his brow, dropping a sheet of blood into his eyes. Pignot cried out, grabbed the weapon arm, and smashed the midsection of his attacker, pummeling him until he slumped to the road like a broken sack of meat. Pignot continued pounding his head, driving his knuckles behind his foe's ears. He pulled back a boot to finish him off. An arm whipped about his throat, immediately robbing him of air.
"Not yet, pigshite!"
Prageous again. The man's vice-like arms clamped down on Pignot's throat with enough force to make the alley spin. Pignot clawed at him, feeling skin shred under his nails. He reached up and tore at eyes. Prageous screamed. Pignot screamed back. He slammed the house pit fighter against the wall, loosening the grip on his throat. Pignot crushed him there once more. Then again, Blood bubbled and sputtered on his lips as the alley elongated and pressed in all at once. Prageous's grip tightened, tightened more, until bones creaked. Pignot staggered from the wall and heaved himself into the air, taking the man latched onto him all the way, and landed flat on the stone road in a brutal impact of mass flattening mass. A dazed Pignot untangled himself from the stunned gladiator's limbs. He got to a knee, wiped the blood still oozing over his face, and took a quick look around. Prageous didn't move. People watched from the mouth of the alleyway, and when Pignot tensed up, the lot of them bolted out of sight, squealing.
Not finished,
Pignot breathed, clearing his eyes of blood yet again. He looked down at the stunned and gasping form of Prageous, desperately trying to pull air back into his frame. Pignot cupped the man's head with one hand, yanked it from where it rested on the stones, and pistoned a fist into it twice, knocking the lout unconscious. Pignot stood, swayed, and regarded the other three men down. Shouts were coming from the alehouse. Time was running out. He had to get away. But something made Pignot stop for a moment.
What odds?
He muttered. He'd only wanted a drink in the first place. He kicked the knife man twice, buckling him up like a length of broken wood, before delivering equally powerful and savage kicks to the pair still clutching at their fruits. Only after he finished the fight, he hadn't started, did Pignot turn and flee into the deepest part of the alley, into the night, clutching at his bleeding forehead. Back at the mouth of the alley, the man called Toffer watched with his handful of warriors as Pignot disappeared into the murky gloom. Men from the alehouse streamed into the alley. Toffer shook his head at the fallen pit fighters, four of them against one. He and his boys had followed Pignot all the way from the bathhouse, and Toffer was almost of a mind to stop the drunken bastard before he set foot into what was known as a drinking place for the elite. He was glad he didn't, however. He hadn't seen all of the fight, as it was in the shadows, but he had seen enough. Beating four gladiators to a finger of their lives impressed Toffer, and he could tell from the silence of his lads that they'd been impressed as well. Toffer rubbed at his chin. It was something to keep in mind for the future. He eyed the men, now fussing with the fallen gladiators, lifting them from the blood spatters on the roads, cut and fitted stones. Pignot, despite being drunk, had the goods, and Toffer sensed an opportunity to make coin. Chapter 12. After talking of their plans and lesser matters, Harm, Muluk, and Gol retired early for the night. Harm and Muluk decided to split the price of an upstairs room, to spare them the trek back to the pit and the crowded general quarters. Gol elected to stay in a room of his own. In the morning, after a brief breakfast, the three of them got walking, intent on visiting the one called Clavellus. Gol believed that if they walked fast enough, they should reach his property by noon. Harm hadn't drunk much at all the night before, so he believed it was possible to cover the distance in short time. By late morning, it was a different story.
"Seaman's crack!"
Muluk panted and wiped at the sweat on his face, while his white shirt and black trousers were saturated.
"Who thought of doing this?"
A shirtless Harm cleared his own face of sweat and dried his palms off on his own black pants. A heavy sheen of perspiration covered his shoulders, drizzled with dark hair. He pointed at Gol, who swung himself along on his crutches and, though sweating, didn't seem nearly as tired as his companions.
"Dying sudden,"
Muluk muttered.
"Easy to figure. Even on crutches he outpaces us."
"I'm fine."
Harm eyed the twisting road, dusty and full of ruts. It cut through a field of wild grass. Thickets of wood sprouted up in places, blotting out the horizon.
"Good to get out of the city."
Muluk drew his hand over his face and neck, and again wiped it off on his trousers.
"We didn't ever take the time to look at the matchboard."
"No need," Gol answered from ahead.
"Why's that?"
"You're not fighting this day."
"I know I'm not fighting this day, you git. What about Harm here? He's still in the tournament."
"Never thought about checking it,"
Harm admitted.
Harm isn't fighting this day or tomorrow. He just fought a few days ago. Gol focused on the road. Besides, he'll need the time to heal. The Jiberian touched the soaked bandages covering his belly and frowned. He had to take shallow breaths as well, for deeper ones made his ribs ache. Vadrian the Fire, he thought grimly. I'm glad the maggot's dead. His hand strayed to where his sword would be hanging, the only possession he had these days, besides his purse of gold coins. I'll need time to heal after this walk, Mullock's voice grated. I think I like you better when you're drunk, Gol said. I like me better when I'm drunk. We don't even have weapons. Sweet setting above. I'll have my sword back later this night with a new scabbard, Harn said. Well, if any Deser are about, I'm sure they'll wait for you to go get her and then return here. Harm regarded Mullock. You are cranky this morning. Just can't believe I'm here doing this. What else would you be doing? Harm's voice boomed. Women, Mullock answered. They'll still be there when you get back. This is for you, Harm said. Once things come into place, you'll be happy you did this. You'd be doing nothing, Gol said reproachfully. You need coin for women, or drinking, or eating, unless you can pull gold out of your ass. Mullock scowled at the sun overhead. Nice morning for it, anyway. More like it, Harm smiled, showing terrible teeth. I'll say one thing about this country. The scenery is nice. That might change if we travel far enough. There's marshlands to the east. Far to the east. Gol cut in. Clavellus is nowhere near that. We'll be there by noon, you'll see. This road's terrible, Harm observed. Needs to be filled in, widened too. We wouldn't have roads like this in Jiberia. Never been, Mullock said. We'll have to go sometime, once this is all done. I hear it's full of barbarians. Visigar roam its plains, riding down any weak enough to steal from. Harm looked at him. Where did you hear that? Around. You listen to people's conversations, hear things here and there. Well, there are Visigar, but they aren't the ones to start a fight. You'd have to cross them first. Unlike the Dezer. Those are right evil bastards. They'll ride anyone down for coin or fun. Even the standing army is wary about areas where the Dezer might be. Heard they were gathering up tribes, starting an army. Harm shrugged his hairy shoulders. Heard that one for years. The trouble with that is the land is so damn big and the desert are divided, scattered, and untrusting of each other. Oh, they might form up one of these days, but I doubt I'll be alive to see it. Anyway, we should be more concerned with what happens in this part of the world. Sanja has Norden to worry about. Harm looked at Gol's back. What do you think of the war? Not mine, the Cree answered. Deep thoughts now, is it? Harm chuckled. I suppose I was asking the wrong one. Never was one for mass land wars or politics or such gurry. If Sanja falls, well, we'll just have to see what happens under Norden rule. Or leave. I've heard they're pressing into the poor savages' tribal lands, Mullock said. Poor savages? Harm's brow furrowed. Who are they? You called them pack savages, but they're rightfully called poor. Pignot called them pack savages as well. Pignot was probably chuckling at you when he did. That wouldn't have surprised Harm. Where are they about? Timberlands to the west, far over there, in places where it's said civilization hasn't touched yet, Mullock informed him. Ah, oh, I've heard about those forests. Well, anyway, Nords are greedy bastards then, to open up a two-front war. Right greedy, Mullock added. And from what I hear, poor savages have nothing against forming up to butcher an invader. That's a terrible place to wage war, though. Their forests are big, Harm supplied. Big and vast, Gol said from ahead. Dense. Places where the sun doesn't sun, because of whole canopies formed from thick branches. Haunted, too, if you believe the stories. I believe them, Mullock said solemnly. Gol didn't look back. When her borders touched the poor tribal lands, Huge expeditions from Sunjo went into those forests and never came out. I hear the king sent three before giving up on establishing relations.
Three?
Muluk said.
Never heard of that.
Three. Before the Nordish War and on the command of King Jun's father. Don't know why, but you ask any of the Sunjans. Say what you will of them, they know their history. Halm realized there weren't any Sunjans in their little group. Pignot hadn't returned to the alehouse where they'd slept the night before. He thought of the room he and Muluk had shared. It had been a luxury compared to sleeping in general quarters. Gold surprised them both by paying for his own. That, Cree, Harm believed, had his tastes.
Any idea of who might win the war?
Harm asked.
Sunja, I hope,
Muluk replied, at least while I'm still within her borders.
Gol?
The other Cree didn't answer right away, so consumed he was with forging ahead and watching where he placed his crutches. Doesn't matter what I think. I said already, not my war. It's beyond me. The conversation lagged then as the three men placed their remaining energy into walking.
Thought you said this place was close?
Muluk griped.
Shut up!
Gol griped right back. The walls rose up and over the fields like a small fortress, stamping the top of a small rise and giving anyone looking a far view of the surrounding grassy sea. The gates hung open, and dark shapes moved about the wall while the mid-afternoon sun fell from the sky. That it took longer than Gold had expected to reach their destination gave fuel to weary griping from his companions. Harm and Muluk were almost spent. Gold, however, marched on towards the structure. He paused every now and again to mop the sweat from his brow and face, but was soon swinging on his crutches. Harm had to admire the Cree and his weapon-master training. The bastards obviously stressed endurance. The wall's wrought-iron gates abruptly closed, pushed by three men behind the bars.
See that?
Gol asked the others. They know we're coming.
They'd have to be blind not to see us.
Muluk glanced around.
You could see anyone from up there.
They built that place well, right on a rise in the land.
An old bridge came into view, crossing a shallow trench. They thumped over it, listening to the hollow sounds of their crossing. White rocks in the moat were bone dry, and a cloud of insects lifted into the air and snaked away from the men.
Mind yourselves now, Gold told them as they drew closer. Let me talk. Neither of you look fit enough to do anything anyway.
I could piss right here,
Harm huffed, red-cheeked and feeling as if he were about to melt. That brought a look of alarm from Gol.
Far enough,
yelled one of the figures behind the gate, distant enough that his features could not be seen.
What is it you want?
The three travellers stopped well within bow range of the walls.
We want to speak with Clavellus, if this is his house,
Gol shouted back, recovering from what Harm had said.
It is, came the reply. What do you want to speak to him about?
The gladiator games of Sunja, and whether he would be interested in being a taskmaster again. Silence.
Wait there, then. I'll see if he's taking visitors.
One man walked out of sight, leaving his two companions to mind the walls. Four torsos carrying spears and bows appeared along the top and lingered.
How tall are those walls?
Muluk asked quietly.
10 feet.
At least.
No more, I think.
Harm kept his own voice low.
High enough to keep the likes of us out, then.
Why that? Like we're about to climb anything,
Harm muttered. He wanted to drink very badly, and he wasn't kidding about the piss, either.
How far does it go around, I wonder?
Shut up,
Gol whispered. You'd think we were about to lay siege to the place. That quieted both men for a few moments.
Farther than I'm willing to walk,
Muluk commented to Harm in an even lower whisper, eyeing Gol's back warily.
The old bastard must be rich, though, to have all of this.
Moments later the man returned.
Approach the gates, the voice shouted. Mind yourselves. Do you have any weapons?
None, Gol answered for them all.
Dangerous to be travelling without something.
We don't have much,
Gold yelled back. Except the gold in my purse, and no doubt what friend Gold is carrying under his shirt, Harm thought. They approached the walls, seeing the whitewashed stone and the grey lines of fresh mortar. The men at the gates pulled them open just enough to allow entry and closed them right after. A tall brute of a man walked over to the three newcomers and inspected their persons for weapons. Broad of shoulder, the man had no hair to speak of, while a gruesome scar stretched up the left side of his face. The ear was missing on that side as well. Harm frowned slightly. It wasn't the first time he'd seen scars or missing ears. But this one wore them with a sinister air, as if he were one word away from beating the three of them senseless. "Careful, aren't you?" the Siberian asked the bald man, noting the old scabbard hanging off his hip. For a moment, green eyes held his attention, judging him a troublemaker or simply harmless. Harm kept his mouth shut and studied the other men inside the walls. All of them wore assorted clothes of a modest make, suited for hard work in the countryside. As the green-eyed brute checked Gol and Mullock in turn, Harm took in the rest of the enclosed courtyard. White sands covered much of the ground, but he saw walkways made of fitted brick, curving in a ring that encompassed the whole area. He recognized it as the training grounds for pit fighters, saw the crossed practice timbers, with the simple shape of a man's height and outstretched arms, all for working strikes. A pile of thicker timbers, for strength training, lay piled up neatly against a far wall. More bare walls built underneath, and holding up the ramparts, were divided up into several equally spaced doorways, some closed, some open. To Harm's left lay an open smithy, dead and empty to the world. He spotted two anvils, a sleek tub for cooling hot metal, and a fire pot. Tongs hung down from unseen hooks set into overhead timbers. Two fresh piles of plum-sized shite dotted the sand just beyond the smithy, making a trail between it and the master's residence, perhaps leading to a stable. The master's residence was situated across from the main gate. A second-floor balcony fenced with stumpy columns leaned out over the training area, potentially offering a place for archers if the gate was ever breached. Under this, and within the shade, was a set of heavy-looking wooden doors. As Harm sized it all up, a figure opened the balcony doors and walked through. He stopped and leaned on the fat stone railing and studied them curiously. A shorter man waved the three of them forward, while the guards kept watch on the ramparts. The tall, one-eared ogre stayed three quick strides away from Harm's left, as he and Mullock walked behind Gol. Gol swung forward on his crutches, stopping directly below the balcony. "Are you Clavellus?"
"I am," was all he said.
Clavellus's skin was deeply tanned, which made his bushy white beard all the more memorable. Light trousers and white shirt were all he wore, and he scratched at a bald head. He didn't appear heavy with muscle or fat.
"What is it?" "I'm Gol of Cree. These are my companions. Harm of Siberia, and Mullock of Cree. We're here this day to ask if you would consider training us for the gladiator games of Sunja, as our taskmaster."
Clavellus took his time answering, meeting the eyes of all three visitors before settling back on Gol.
"The games have already started."
"We know this," Gol said. "We're already participating in the games, but we wish to establish our own house, and we request that you consider being a part of it."
"You want to have a house?"
Clavellus leaned forward.
"You're free trained?"
Gol hesitated a moment.
"We are."
This struck Clavellus speechless for seconds before he cut loose.
"Free trained? What are you punces thinking? Who put you up to this? Do you know who I am? I've trained warriors for years. I've trained animals with more skill than you lot. Certain above knows I've cast you masterless pit dogs when, by whatever luck or trickery, you spoiled the run at greatness by one of my own fighters. Sweet Satan! You asslickers turn my guts. And to think you came here to ask me face to face. I only wish I lived days away from the city,
The balls on you all! And to do this while the games are already in progress. Unfit! Train you? The likes of you? And those like you? You lot truly belong out there with the gutty. Let me tell you this. You don't have a hope in the games, and the sooner you perish, the better. We can pay you, Gol said when he had the opening. Pay me? Yes. Handsomely. Handsomely, is it? You'll pay me handsomely. And if I did take your money, where is it you think will train you? Where should I transform you into killers? You have a training area? Equipment? Practice weapons? Where are your own weapons? Where are you intending to sleep at nights or eat during the day? Or were you going to pay me handsomely to use everything I have? Gold did not answer, appearing increasingly chagrined. Yes, I see now. You expect me to bow and offer up my ass at the mention of coin, wave gold about and expect me to throw open my arms and mind you as though you were sons. Do you see how short-sighted that is? Clearly this wasn't your plan before you stepped through my gates. Probably even figured you'd build your own house if I said no. Am I right? Defy us all. Gol looked at the ground and pursed his lips as if he were about to give someone a very hard kiss. Muluk cleared his throat, and even Harm felt heat rush into his face. Things weren't looking so rosy after all. Who are you? Clavellus finished from above. Not even Gol had the mind to answer. Get out of my sight. With that, Clavellus motioned to the men standing about Harm and the others. Master Clavellus. Gol started suddenly. Get them out of my sight! Clavellus shouted, disappearing through a doorway. One Ear moved in, scowling with his hand on his sword. The archers and spearmen on the ramparts took aim, while five more men surrounded the Kree men and the Jiberian, and closed in. We're going, Gol said calmly. We're going. Moments later, the gate rattled and clicked closed behind them. The men behind it and on the ramparts carefully watched the three. With Gol leading, they marched away from the house of Clavellus and did not look back. Well, that was a cow kiss, Muluk said quietly, studying the grass. Why that? Harm said. I feel terrible. Don't mind them, Gol said, peering ahead. We go to Thymondas now. And if he says no? Muluk said. He won't. And that was all Gol had to say on the matter. Clavellus collapsed on a divan and crossed one leg over the other. He idly stroked his beard, pausing only to sip from the bottle of mead he had gathered. It had been a fine day to drink, and he'd done enough of it in the morning that, when those three punces visited, he had been feeling little to no pain. From the courtyard, he heard the squeal and clack of the gate being shut, and he shook his head at the balls of his visitors. Free-trained, wanting to be trained by him, as though he would do such a thing. He might have fallen out of grace with the other houses and schools of Sunja, but he still had some pride.
What was that about?
Nala asked him from their bedroom, her voice sounding only half interested. However, as his wife, she felt she should be privy to everything.
Nothing. You were shouting.
I'm drunk.
I heard only a part of it.
Everything's fine, Nala. I've taken care of it.
All right.
He took another drink and beheld the purple bottle at arm's length. It reminded him of royalty. He was royalty once, hailed like a king. Still had a few followers who had chosen to stay with him even after his fall from grace. Fall from grace. The thought both amused and galled him. Evidently he'd fallen far enough to be courted by free-trained. Oh, how he'd fallen. Free-trained. Clavellus eyed the mouth of the bottle, dark and fragrant with mead, and took another exceptionally long pull of its contents. Chapter 13. They had called him a weapon enough times for him to believe it.
His given name was Junga, from far off Perisha, and he was in the games to be respected, to be feared, and to punish any who faced him. He trained with schools in his homeland, and done some soldiering with the army there. And when the opportunity came to leave, he did so with an eye on the great games of Sanja. Coin was only an afterthought in his mind. He wanted to prove to them all that he was the best. And as far as he was concerned, he was free-trained. When his name was called, he came forth wearing a plain helmet, brass braces, greaves, a stiff vest of leather, and his sword hanging off his waist in a scabbard. The media stopped the fighter in front of his wooden desk, which rose above the grounds of general quarters, so that he looked down on all of the free-trained fighters. He was slim of build and dressed in white robes, identifying his station in the games. Like other men of his age, he had his thin white hair cut almost perfectly down the middle. A row of scars lined the front of the platform, while six others stood at guard behind the media himself, three on each end of the massive matchboard designating the fights for the day, as well as a week ahead.
You there, your name, are you from Perisha?
Greatness recognized, Junga thought.
I am.
Why aren't you listed with the house, then?
I represent myself.
That put a smirk on Media's wizened face, and he momentarily scratched at the finely parted crease that ran down the middle of his fine white hair.
Off you go, then.
Junga stared at the arena official with an air that might have blown down from the lands of great eyes. He didn't like that condescending slant to the man's face. The media cocked an eyebrow at him in return, as if daring him to say anything, while several scars stood before and behind his station. The line of the older man's mouth was a borderline sneer.
Off you go, free trained.
The media dismissed him and went back to consulting his lists. Junga gave him no further thought, thinking the official undeserving of the effort. The next time they would meet, he was certain the media would treat him differently. He meandered down the white tunnel, past the scars, standing guard at marked intervals, eyeing them with only a distant curiosity of how their training might have differed from his own. His mind then filled with images of what he had gone through to reach this point. Above, the ceiling vibrated with sound, reminding him of waterfalls in the winter. He stopped in his tracks at the noise, and studied the stone above him for signs of cracking. When he saw none, he continued on his way. Junga wasn't a large man, but he knew he was fast and well-built as well, like most of the fighters in general quarters, although he'd spotted a few who were grossly out of shape. Still, looks could be deceiving, as he very well knew, as he hoped his would. He stopped at the gatekeeper and regarded his own boots.
"See anything of note back there?"
the old man asked him.
"Saw you stop."
"Just listening," Junga replied, uninterested.
"Only wearing the leather, eh?"
the gatekeeper croaked and flexed woolly jowls. Junga exhaled and squinted at the portcullis above.
"Only the leather.
You'll be nimble out there.
Huh.
Going to pull that sword out?"
Eventually.
Junga went back to studying his boots. The gatekeeper grunted, thinking the young pup was going to be bleeding meat in only moments, and pulled the lever. Junga took his time and purposefully climbed the steps to the waiting daylight. He emerged from the tunnel and felt the hot sun on Watt's skin was exposed. The audience cheered and cursed, the sound falling on him like rough winter surf. He only glanced in their direction, glimpsing faces and torsos mashed together like a writhing collage of sun-bronzed flesh. In a detached moment, he thumbed the pommel of his undrawn sword and wondered who'd placed coin on his head to win. They'd be happy after the fight. He intended to make them remember, to make them all remember. The orator introduced him, but he was only halfway listening. The sun blazed overhead, and he felt sweat bead uncomfortably on his forehead. It was too hot to fight this day, even with the little armor he wore. He could smell the heat and the ripe sweat of the spectators. Across the sands, another free-trained warrior waited,
holding a sword and shield and dressed in chainmail. A helmet, sporting a single fin down the middle, nodded in his direction. Junga didn't hear the fighter's name. Junga frowned and wondered how hot the heavy armor must feel.
"Begin!" shouted the orator. "Too hot,"
Junga thought. He wouldn't make this mistake a second time. It was then he decided to make a spectacle of himself. With a gasp of relief, he pulled off his helmet and let it drop to the sand, taking all the time in the world. He swiped his hand over his bristly hair, disturbing a mist of sweat. His right bracer followed, dropping into the sand where the sun flashed angrily off their worn surfaces. The crowd's deafening drone became one of hushed disbelief, but Junga paid them little heed. He doubted they knew what it was like to wear armor under this sun. His opponent halted in his tracks, watching with peculiar puzzlement. It wasn't every day a pit fighter stepped onto the sands and stripped. Junga checked on him when his left bracer fell, making sure the man behaved. When he stooped to a knee to unlace the leather binding of a greave, the crowd's muttering of wonder became as loud as a field of locusts. He tossed the slab of metal away, checked once more on where his opponent stood, and took his time unlacing the second. By this time, the jeers from sections of the audience grew louder. Laughter rang out from both men and women.
"Take it all off, you stupid punts! This is the kind of show I want more of!" cried a female. "Stupid ass! What in Simon's hell are you doing? The lad's unfit!"
Junga stood up, took a breath, and grimaced with the heat. Even the orator was looking from side to side now, gauging the reaction of the crowds and his own confusion at what was happening on the sands. Junga squinted and slowly unlaced his leather vest at the side, appreciating the time his opponent allowed him. He nodded in the direction of the heavily armored man, who shook his helmeted head in reply.
"No doubt thinks I'm unfit,"
Junga thought, and mentally shrugged as he lifted the vest away. He pulled off his shirt then, receiving the screams of delight from the female onlookers and even a few of the men. Inspecting himself while placing a hand to his chiseled stomach, Junga saw that he was free of everything that could come off, except for his trousers. He wasn't about to remove